Well, good morning. As we are between the two studies, one in the book of Matthew, one in the book of 1 Corinthians, we're between those two books. I thought it would be helpful to spend a couple of Sundays getting some biblical anchor points to get us through this crisis. Now, last week we spoke about contentment and peace, how we might have that, and hopefully that helped on a practical level. But in our contentment, we may have had some time to think. And we've been hearing all these people say different things about the coronavirus and about what it is. Some preachers say it is a judgment from God on the world. Others say it's a wake-up call. Some say God didn't have anything to do with it at all, but that he loves you. And those that don't believe in God just say it's just one of those things in a world of random chance. Now, I don't mean to add another opinion to confuse us even more, but I do think there's a portion of the Bible that really helps clear the air on what's happening with this virus. I think it sums up the message that we're supposed to be hearing right now, and it proclaims to us how we should be thinking about this whole situation. As our preaching team got together this week, we decided to call this message the Gospel of the Coronavirus. Now, the word gospel means good news, and there is some good news in this passage, or in this virus and the whole message of the virus, but I think there's also a message in here that we need to hear, one that needs to be proclaimed, a gospel, so to speak. In other words, this is what God is trying to say to us during this time of the coronavirus. Now, the passage we're going to look at is in Romans chapter 8, not chapter 9, but chapter 8, and I'd like to pick up our study in verse 19. And through these verses, we'll see three truths that I believe God, through the coronavirus, wants us to know. The first truth is of this gospel of the coronavirus is that God created the world different than what it is today. Look at verse 19. For the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. You see, right away we discover that things are not the way they're supposed to be. That God created a good world. And creation is personified here. It's given a voice, and it speaks poetically and prophetically. And it says, this is creation talking. If I could speak for myself, I'd say I'm looking forward to the day when God's work with mankind is complete. Now, that is a loaded sentence that carries a ton of freight. The whole of God's creation was made for the development of mankind so that we might enjoy God and glorify him. And until then, creation is in a state of waiting and longing. So let's unpack that for a moment. The world was created by God, and he has turned it into something of a proving ground for mankind. There will be a day when God shows off his finished work. That's you and me. He'll say, ta-da, here's my beautiful work. Here's my glorious work. And that's amazing that God would see us this way. You know, some environmentalists think that we human beings are the real virus and that we should get off the planet and Earth would be better for it. But the Bible teaches us that this world was meant for us, not us for the world. Not for us to abuse it or pollute it or ruin it, but to take care of it and enjoy it. Now, this is a staggeringly significant fork in the road in terms of how we see the world. The Bible affirms that God is a good creator who creates good things, and it says that from beginning to end. The very first words of the Bible are, for God created the heavens and the earth. And the phrase, he saw that it was good, is repeated over and over again, letting us know that all that God created was good. 1 Timothy 4:4 says, for everything created by God is good. In the last book of the Bible, Revelation says, worthy are you, O our Lord and our God, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and because of your will they existed and were created. So this world was created. It did not evolve by random chance. And when God created it, it was good. Now, why is that important for us to know? Well, it tells us something very important about God. It tells us that God's original design was not that we live in a world of sickness, disease, and death. He did not create an imperfect world, but a perfect one. He is not the author of disease. Now, you might object. You might say, well, if God created everything, then he created bacteria and viruses, and he did create the coronavirus. He did create disease. Well, the answer to that is yes, he did create viruses and bacteria, but he did not create disease. You see, God created bacteria and viruses, but not in their deadly form. Did you know that the feared Black Plague was a simple bacteria? And did you also know that there are good bacteria that live inside your intestinal tract right now, and they help you digest your food? Something similar could be said of viruses. Viruses are one of the most common living things on earth, and they're almost always thought of in connection with disease like influenza, smallpox, HIV, Ebola. But viruses have healthful properties as well. They are being used to fight cancer. Viruses can fight bad bacteria, and they are used even in making vaccines. So here's the point. God created everything good, including viruses and bacteria, but something went horribly wrong. Something was injected into God's perfect world that caused a deadly mutation of all things. The Bible says that all this transpired when sin entered the world. And sin had a terrible effect on the world in which we now live. Now you might say, well, where did sin come from? Well, God created mankind with free will because he wanted us to be able to love him. For us to be able to love him, we had to have a choice. So in giving us free will, he also gave us the potential of bringing sin into existence. God did not create sin, disease, and death. We brought it about when we sinned and when we chose to walk away from him. We actualized it, so to speak. So here's an important point. This tainted world was not designed to be this way. God made us for something better. That's the first point here. God created a perfect world. The world that we're in right now is not the world that God created for us. Now look at verse 20. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but also we ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves. Now, I think the key to understanding this section here is that word futility, that the creation was subjected to futility. What does futility mean? Futility is basically the state of being without use. It's having no value. Emptiness, no purpose at all. And this verse makes it clear that God was the one enforcing futility upon the creation. But it also says he did so in hope, meaning that he had a rescue plan in place. Now, what does all this mean? There was a lot of things that were just said there in that one verse. Well, let's unpack it again. So to understand this, we need to go back to another verse in Romans, Romans 5:12. Through one man, sin entered into the world, and death through sin. And so death spread to all man because all sin. So sin is the cause of this futility. Sin is what brought about that lack of value. And that's when when sin came in, that's when viruses and bacteria morphed and mutated into something deadly, and everything on this entire planet was tainted by sin. Nothing escaped the consequences of sin's entrance into our world. Now, to borrow a phrase from the first chapter of Romans, where it talks about God giving us over to the consequences of our sin, this is exactly what, when it says that he subjected us to futility, it's basically saying God gave us over to the consequences of our sin. He fixed that emptiness into this world, not just to rub our nose in it, but to point us to something better. And what he's doing is he's forcing us to see what life would be like without him. You know, we have no life in and of ourselves. We have no existence in and of ourselves. If we are not connected to our Creator, we really are nothing. We're valueless. We cannot keep ourselves living and breathing. We just simply perish. And so there's a futility in our existence unless we are connected to God. We're useless. But what's interesting is how Romans 8 describes the creation's reaction to that futility that God put upon it. And again, we see if creation could talk, it would say, "What has happened to me?" This is the personification of creation. And so creation is saying, "This is not the way it's supposed to be." And it groans under the weight of this corruption. And it longs to be set free from the slavery. It actually calls it a slavery of corruption. So this corruption around us is just like chains on our arms and our legs, and we can't get away from it. We're stuck in this. Now, let's apply that basic principle to the coronavirus. What would the coronavirus then proclaim to us today? What would it say if it could talk? Well, let me conjecture. It would probably say something like this. It would say, "This is what I was meant for. I was not designed to bring you harm, suffering, and death. I was not designed to be a disease that would cause you pain. And I long to be what I was created for. I long for the creation to be everything it was meant to be." You see, again, this passage is using this poetic personification to make the point that things are just not as they should be. Everything, even viruses, are not what they should be. And this verse says that we too groan under the weight of a sin-sick world. In other words, in the same way that creation is groaning, you and I, and here's the, you know, if you're a little lost, here's what we need to zero in on. You and I right now, instead of fixating on this world, we too should be longing, we too should be groaning, we too should be saying, "This is not all that I'm created for. This is not all that there is here." The gospel of the coronavirus is that the world in which we live in is broken. It is fractured by sin. And so the correct way to look at this world is with something of a holy indifference. And this is the hope that we have. So hope is basically this. It's turning our gaze away from this world. It's not obsessing about the things of this world. But it's loosening us up. This is the gospel of the coronavirus, that we are being loosened up from this world, and then a hope for something better is being created, the thing that we were designed for. We should be longing too for our true home. This world is full of spiritual, emotional, and physical viruses. This earth has leprosy, so to speak. Now, why would we then focus all of our attention on this world? Look again at verses 21 and 22. It says, "The creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption." In verse 22, "The whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth." this world is longing to give birth to another world. You know, it's good that we enjoy this planet. I know that some of you enjoy the mountains. I, for one, enjoy the ocean. It's fine either way. I have been enjoying this series called Blue Planet 2. And I'm fascinated by the ocean. I love it. I marvel. I worship every episode that I see. God made this world such an amazing, complicated place. And how can you not marvel and enjoy when you discover the world and how amazingly intricate it is? But things like the coronavirus remind us that even good things, things like the ocean, things like the mountains, things like beauty, and things like love, are all infected by the disease of sin. And so life has a fragility to it. It's fragile. And all the numbers we see on the coronavirus tally board translate into millions of little tragedies with tears and cries of anguish behind each one. We ourselves could pass away at any moment, truth be told. We're mortal beings who bloom and flourish and then wither and perish. And in the same way creation longs for rebirth, you and I must be cultivating in ourselves a longing to be free. We cannot get too comfortable with this life here on earth. We must be wary of letting our roots grow too deep here. And maybe this is when we need to preach ourselves, to ourselves, the gospel of the coronavirus and remind ourselves that this isn't what life was created to be. We remind ourselves that there is more. Can you hear God speaking to you during this time of crisis that we're in? I love a quote from C.S. Lewis, which comes to mind here. He says this, "God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pain. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. We are most keenly aware of God's character in our suffering. It is when our self-sufficiency is peeled away that we see how weak we really are." COVID-19 is God's megaphone telling us to look up. We hear almost daily the statistics of how many people are dying from the virus. But here's another statistic. We all have the virus of sin. And people that recover from it are, well, there aren't any. There's a one-to-one ratio of those who die from sin. And the answer here, and this is important, as we come to grips with the fact that we live in a world that's fractured, broken, and diseased, the key is not that we're to be led to despair. But remember what it said back in verse 19, that God fixed this futility in the world in order that hope might be brought. We were saved to hope. That's where we're supposed to be. And you see this most in our third point here, picking it up halfway through, verse 23, waiting eagerly. See, this is what we're supposed to be hoping for, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. For in hope we have been saved, but hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes in what he's already seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, with perseverance, we wait eagerly for it. So there's with perseverance, we eagerly hope for adoption and redemption. Those two things, those are two great anchors of our hope. So we're to turn our attention away from the world here that is dying. It doesn't make sense that we throw all of our life energy into just this world because it's fading away. We should turn our attention and turn our energies and our life to something that does not perish. And the great thing that we have to look forward to, two things here, is adoption and redemption. Think about adoption for a moment. And maybe part of the problem is that we don't use our imagination enough to imagine what our future state is going to be like. The fact that we're adopted into his family. Think about it this way. Down here on earth, there is the disease of loneliness. There's the disease of isolation and conflict and people not getting along and people being misunderstood. There's the sense that people try everything to be accepted and to belong somewhere. But our adoption into God's family assures us that we have a place, that we're legally belonging to the God of the universe, that we are in his family, not as slaves or servants, not as worshipers just floating around on a cloud somewhere. We are his family. We're sons and daughters. And that satisfies that deep relational longing that we all have. And it says redemption, not only adoption, but redemption is what we're to be looking forward to. You know, redemption is the idea of the fact that God just doesn't throw something away. He renews it. And so this is a wonderful thing about God. He's not in the practice of just tossing things aside. So he takes us right where we are and he redeems us. And think about that. Our minds right now bend towards selfishness, lust, greed. But when God redeems us, our minds will bend toward love, just naturally. How awesome is that? Physically, how is God going to redeem us physically? Physically, our leprous bodies break down and fail us. And we're all running around like frightened children because of this disease that very well could take one of our lives. Our bodies are frail, but you and I will be renewed to perpetual life. A body that does not fear pain or suffering or death. If you catch a virus in heaven, it'll be good for you. You know, God is just not going to leave this place in a mess. And he's not going to leave you in a mess either. A good and gracious God will not just throw it away. He redeems us and takes us to his home. He will wipe away every tear. What an amazing God we have. And verse 24 says, in hope we have been saved, meaning that you and I are not saved to be anxious or fearful. We are saved in hope. So even though we see the corruption of sin, and again, the coronavirus has just simply brought that to light. It's always been there. But you and I, because we live in America, we have a lot of money and we can spend a lot of time and effort on our comforts, that we don't have to think about how much suffering there is in the world. And then something like this comes along and it kind of peels away the mask, that facade that says, you know what? This world is not as it should be. That's the thing that we need to remember most. That's the gospel of the coronavirus. And we need to use then our imaginations to think about how great it will be when we're redeemed and when we're adopted. I mean, today, think about five ways that your life will change when you're adopted, when you experience that adoption. You're already, if you've accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior, you're already adopted into his family. But think about what will happen when that adoption is realized. How awesome will that be? Think and use your imagination. What will it be like when this body is redeemed, when that great ta-da happens and God reveals us to amazing, glorious states that we would be just tempted to worship each other, as C.S. Lewis says, if we saw each other. And we can glorify God in ways that we just can't down here. We try to worship down here, but we're so poor at it, aren't we? I mean, we get bored. We're singing, and then we're looking around, and, you know, we get distracted. And, oh, that's a pretty dress. And why is the guy parting his hair that way? And so we're always thinking about these things when we're worshiping. But that's not going to happen when we see God face to face. Believe me, it is going to be so breathtaking, so astounding, that worship in heaven is going to be just one big wow. That's what we have to look forward to. Think, imagine, think about what it's going to be like when we are redeemed. And you know, until then, we don't understand maybe why some people succumb to things like viruses and others survive. But we can't figure it out. I can't explain that. No one can, really. And so we must learn to trust in our Creator, our Redeemer, our good, good Father, because we know the way He created things and the way He's redeeming things, He can't be anything else than magnificently, wonderfully good. I love what Spurgeon said here, and we should say this to ourselves when we're questioning why maybe things happen the way they do. Spurgeon said this: God is too good to be unkind and too wise to be mistaken. And when we can't trace His hand, we must trust His heart. I love that. I'd like to end with a verse that comes just prior to where we started our journey. If you go back before Romans 8:19, you get to verse 18, and it's really a fitting way to end our time together this morning. It says this: "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us." Isn't that great? This ain't nothing. I know that the suffering down here, the hospitalizations, the people that are going to end up having this virus and struggling with it on ventilators, that seems massively big. But what it says here is that that's nothing compared to the glory that awaits us when we see God face to face. It will outweigh anything that we've experienced down here. That's how awesome God is. And that's how important it is for us to know Jesus Christ personally, because we can't get to know God unless we understand Him through Jesus Christ, accepting His death on the cross as forgives the basis for our forgiveness from sin. What a tremendous encouragement. I hope that you'll preach to yourself today the gospel of the coronavirus. Now, we have a special treat for us this morning, the way that we're going to end. And we are going to ask Claire Manigan to come. She's here with me, and Colleen is on the organ. And so give us a moment here as we get set up here. But we would like to sing, not we, Claire is going to sing. You don't want to hear me sing. Claire is going to sing, "Be Still My Soul." What a great thing for us to remember as we're struggling, as we start to get anxious about things. Be still. Be still. Quiet ourselves in this wonderful gospel of the coronavirus, that there is hope, that there's adoption and redemption. Be still, my soul. Let's let that minister to you as you hear these words sung.